Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. And other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. This'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, then there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the ting. And always look on the bright.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto. Me ha dado la marcha de mis pies cansados. Con ellos tan duros, playas y desiertos.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As individuals, governments, and organizations around the globe unite to support workers and their families who were devastated during the December 26 tsunami, U.S. labor organizations have begun looking inward to see what they can offer for the relief effort. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees took the lead by donating $10,000 to the nonprofit organization Doctors Without Borders. Cheryl Kelly is a spokesperson for the Federation.
We're reaching out to our fellow workers across the globe who've had their livelihoods and entire way of life taken away from them by this devastating event.
Kelly says it's important for U.S. labor to remember their brothers and sisters overseas.
We feel like it's our obligation to help our brothers abroad. During 9/11, we had many countries to come to our aid, and we feel, you know, that it's necessary and it's important for us, especially as one of the leading labor unions here in the U.S., to do what we can to help those who are in need.
And on the West Coast, the California Nurses Association has begun working closely with the Sri Lanka Public Services Nurses Union to funnel contributions to areas with the most need. The association is also asking some members to volunteer to travel and assist in a country that even before the tsunami was facing a shortage of 7,000 nurses.
The United Mine Workers of America is waging a battle to protect workers from corporate abuses and bankruptcy courts. UMWA Communications Director Doug Gibson says bankruptcy laws need to be reformed so companies can't use them to wipe out health benefits, end union contracts, and take away pensions.
They were written basically by pro-business members of Congress and banks. And in a bankruptcy court right now, the compensation to the workers that were injured by the bankruptcy falls far below compensation to vendors or corporate leaders. So the workers are really left out in the cold in bankruptcy court.
At the Cannleton coal mine in West Virginia, the UMWA is ready to use civil disobedience to protest use of the bankruptcy courts to throw miners out of work.
President Roberts has said he will engage in nonviolent disobedience down there, whether that means sitting in a road, blocking this mine entrance, whatever we have to do to let people know what's happening to American workers in federal bankruptcy court. It's a travesty. It really is.
The UMWA is in U.S. District Court in Ashlands, Kentucky, on behalf of miners in West Virginia, Kentucky, Illinois, and Indiana to defend health care benefits promised to miners by a 1992 federal law, benefits now threatened by corporate bankruptcy actions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to getting kids talking, the nation's need for speech therapists is losing its voice. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that the nation will need 120,000 speech pathologists by 2012. And recent estimates put the number of licensed therapists at 94,000. A large number of those therapists will be retiring over the next few years. Improvements in the ability to diagnose speech impairments and higher rates of autism have led to a greater demand across the country.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
When challenged directly by a crowd of America's troops about the Bushites' ongoing damnable failure to provide adequate armor for our soldiers, Pentagon Chief Donnie Rumsfeld was momentarily speechless. As the crowd murmured, Rummy said, "Now settle down, settle down. Hell, I'm an old man. It's early in the morning, and I'm gathering my thoughts here." If any of the Bushites need clarity on the scandalous way they treat our soldiers, they need only visit Army Specialist Robert Loria of Middletown, New York. Last February, he was in one of Rumsfeld's unprotected Humvees when it was hit by a roadside bomb in Iraq. Loria's left hand and forearm were blasted off and shrapnel ripped through his body. He spent months in rehab, trying to learn how to live without a hand. Finally, just before this Christmas, he was due to be released and return home when he was hit with another bomb. Rumsfeld's Pentagon presented Loria with a bill for $1,700, claiming he had erroneously received family separation pay while in rehab, plus travel expenses connected to his treatment. Also, they billed him for some of the Humvee parts damaged in the bombing that tore off his hand. Loria was devastated, but the Army brass didn't care, demanding payment before they would release him. Hello, the Halliburtons rip off billions from us taxpayers, but the Pentagon is hounding the grunts. It's almost like I'm being abandoned, Loria said. Like, you did your job for us and now you're no use. That's how it feels. Is that clear enough for you, Mr. Rumsfeld? Thanks to press coverage and intervention by some members of Congress, Loria's nightmarish treatment by the Pentagon has finally ended. The Army was forced to clear Loria's hokey debt and send him home. This is Jim Hightower saying, but why should a soldier who's made such an extreme sacrifice be treated so shabbily in the first place? And how many others are getting the same back of the hand?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. It's Tom Hartman. Every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his meds, right? Our quotes for the day tying into our events for the day. We're going to have on in the second half of the first hour of the program a combat vet who's going to talk about Alberto Gonzalez and torture and why the military is opposed to the civilians in the Bush administration who seem to be in favor of torture. In our second hour of our program, we're going to have an attorney come on and try and tell us why hating gays is Christian. That should be an entertaining discussion. I love taking these guys apart. And in our second hour, tools for activism, our NLP class, How Dukakis Became Willie Horton. And we're actually going to demonstrate that on the air. Not that specific, but the principle, how it works. Thus, our quotes for the day, a couple of them. Why do we have to have just one? Hermann Hesse, if you hate a person, you hate something in him that is part of yourself. What isn't part of ourselves doesn't disturb us. This, by the way, attributed to Hermann Hesse, also long-standing, Freud called it projection. Jonathan Swift, we have enough religion to make us hate, but not enough to make us love one another. I think that's a sweet one. And Faith Resnick, our final quote for the day, people who hate cats will come back as mice in their next life. Just Sue in the chat room said, how is Thomas Jefferson, the mouse that lives outside the window of our studio here, Haven't seen him today, but, you know, it's that time of year where they kind of hide out a lot. We haven't had any snow in a couple of days, so there would be no way to have any evidence of him. But I don't see any little mousy corpses, and the cats haven't been out there, so so far, so good. I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic. Welcome to our program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number if you'd like to call in and be on the program, tomhartman.com, our website. If you'd like to drop into our chat room, just click the live chat button. It will take you first to the message board and where you can post messages, and there you will find a link right into the live chat room, which is now running off our message board. This just in from Media Matters. Actually, it was yesterday, but it's still hot news. Staples, you know, the office supply store, Staples, has decided to pull its advertising on Sinclair-owned TV network news programs as a result of complaints from concerned citizens and Media Matters. Media Matters for America, of course, the organization headed up by David Brock, one of the organizations out there in terms of just exposing what's going on in the media. They are doing a wonderful job, an absolutely wonderful job, Media Matters. And Staples put forward this comment or this statement. They said, we appreciate your inquiry concerning this issue. As a result of Staples' ongoing review of its advertising media activity, Staples will no longer be airing advertising on any Sinclair Station news programs as of January 10th, 2005. Thank you for your patience concerning this matter. And of course, Media Matters says, contact Staples and thank them because the Republicans are going to flip out over this. Okay, this was yesterday that they sent this out. And the email is support@orders.staples.com. And, of course, sure enough, they were right. This morning, tens of thousands of people around the United States, plus everybody in the media, myself included, received the following email from the conservative alert folks, right? This alert! In fact, actually, we should be playing our conservative alert theme music here. Yes, it's time for conservative alert. Alert, because the point is the name of this rather virulent, toxic little op-ed editorial that Sinclair forces all of their radio stations to carry. It's done by former CIA agent and current, or CIA employee, I don't know that he was ever an agent, and current Vice President Mark Hyman. No, I'm not going to make any comments. Mark Hyman, Vice President Sinclair, he does these daily rants. For example, I'll give you a few quotes from his rants. Quote, a religion, particularly Christianity, has been under attack by the left for several years. Here's another one. The angry left ridicule what red staters see as moral values, and in their arrogant and superior way, the angry left substitute their own topics. They claim to represent real moral values, unjust war, tax relief, and indifference to the environment. No, these are not moral values. You see, to kill people in an unjust war, that's not a violation of moral principles. Indifference to the environment. Here's another quote from Mark Hyman from his The Point op-ed pieces that are run on all of the Sinclair television stations without rebuttal every night. Quote, mainstream America will not vote for a Democratic Party run by Hollywood liberals, greedy trial lawyers, and clueless academia, end quote. And here's another one. The facts never have and never will matter to the angry left, end quote. I think Mr. Hyman has been reading too many of Newt's talking points memos about always, whenever you say the left, precede it with angry or, you know, whatever. Anyhow, here from this conservative alert, because The Point offers a rare conservative voice on network television, MoveOn.org has launched a campaign to silence this nightly commentary on Sinclair broadcast group stations across America. Your help is needed. Of course, at the very end, there's a pitch for money as well. Infamous for ultra-liberal skullduggery funded by foreign-born multi-billionaire George Soros, MoveOn.org is colluding with Media Matters for America in an effort to twist advertisers' arms and economically smother Sinclair Vice President Mark Hyman's commentary that counters in a small way the pro-Democrat deluge that inundates viewers from other news sources. Don't let MoveOn.org coerce this voice. We need to be urging Sinclair advertisers to not only reject this dangerous ploy by a despicable organization and encourage The Point, but encourage additional media to correct lopsided news presentations so that conservative voices aren't so rare. So rare. What is it, 387 hours a day of right-wing talk programming in America? And you got what on the other side? Me and Al Franken? Is that it? And, you know, and the other voices on Air America Radio, the Randy Rhodes and Mike Beloy. And this is so sad. MoveOn.org just doesn't get the point. These statements are true, says the media, says this conservative alert. Instead of being silent, such points ought to be included in the commentary that masquerades as news elsewhere. Help us spread the word with a donation. Yes. And, you know, along similar lines, I received an interesting email I'd like to share with you in just a moment. First, let's go to the phone lines for just a moment, see what folks have to say about this. Ken in Long Beach, California on the line. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind today?
Hey, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. Oh, I was just, you know, you had some, you were talking on over the holidays, you know, about the Dickens classic and how America is becoming like that. I was thinking of another movie, was the one with, I forgot what they call it, It's a Wonderful Life, remember, with Potterville?
Sure.
And, you know, it's like we're becoming a country that doesn't produce anything anymore. You know, if you divide it between producers and non-productive people, we're becoming entirely a society, basically, of non-producers. And I don't know if you know Lyndon LaRouche. He's talked a little bit about this. I don't know if you like him or don't like him, but...
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know enough about him to offer an opinion on the air.
But well, he's what I can, I know he doesn't like the royal family or something.
Yeah, you know, let's not get into LaRouche.
Diana, I don't know.
Let's not get into LaRouche. Let's stay with the real topic. And the real topic here is
he talks about this at, you know, productive and non-productive, and when you think about it, look how many lawyers we have in this society, you know. The lawyers, the lawyers make most of the money in this society these days.
Oh,
they don't produce anything except conflict.
I would say
other countries don't have so many lawyers.
Ken, can you hear me when you're talking?
I'm sorry.
No, I know it was a serious question. We just readjusted our Gentner, and I'm wondering, can you hear me when I'm talking? I mean, were you intentionally
talking? I
hear
you right now.
Okay, and did you hear me try to interrupt you?
No, not really. No.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. We got to fiddle with our machinery here. So if you're injured, you don't think that you should have a right to an attorney?
No, I don't say all lawyers are bad. Obviously, Japan has lawyers, but they have way less lawyers than we have. And most of those lawyers work for corporations. They don't. You've said so yourself. Mostly suing each other at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, it's about 10-1. Corporate lawsuits against people versus human lawsuits against corporations.
Yeah, well, look at Las Vegas.
But here, okay, let me make this point,
Ken.
Let me make this point. You say we're becoming non-productive, and I agree with you. And here's the reason why we're becoming non-productive. It has nothing to do with there being too many lawyers. It may be that people are going into law because there's nothing left.
There's nothing left, right?
The reality is
becoming Potterville.
Exactly. The reality is that what has happened is the conservative economic policies and conservative trade policies have encouraged corporations, which operate entirely to the benefit of multinational corporations, and basically screw us. You know, it doesn't matter what Americans need. It is not our economic and trade policies have just abandoned any pretense of nationalism or you know, America first-ism or whatever you want to call that, and good, bad, or whatever.
We need more tariffs and less lawyers.
Yeah, I won't disagree with that. And in fact, what I would say is if we had more tariffs and we brought our manufacturing back to the United States and we repealed Taft-Hartley so that we had more good union jobs here in the United States, you would have more people willing to, you know, not wanting to go into law school because they want to make a living, and rather saying, hey, you know, I can get a good job, I can get a pension, I can get good benefits, you know, I'll work at Oldsmobile.
Yeah, but look who makes the money in the society. Not just lawyers. Okay, I don't want to pick on them. Only show business. They have so much. I mean, these people are making so much money. Athletes, people in show business, lawyers, people like CEOs, who's probably the least productive people in a firm, you know,
yeah,
make the most money. If you grow potatoes for a living, you can't earn a living.
And you know why that is.
Yeah, but you'll die without the guy that doesn't.
And the reason why
you'll die without lawyers.
It's got nothing to do with lawyers, Ken. The reason why that is, and thanks for your call, I appreciate it. The reason for that is that our economic policies, again, our conservative economic policies and legal policies have allowed corporations to consolidate to the point where they're monopolizing even agriculture. The factory farming is wiping out the family farm all over the United States. Dixon in Michigan. Dixon, right?
Hello.
Hey, Dixon. What's up?
Hi. I stumbled across a fact that's a little rough. You know, I'm almost hoping I'm wrong about it, but I guess I'm not. On Jeopardy the other night, I imagine they checked their facts pretty close.
Generally.
Their last question was, what metal, if you put all of it that there is in the world into one place, in one big cube, it would be a 55-foot square cube. And it wound up being gold. All the gold in the world
fit
into a 55-foot square cube.
Well, if that's true, then Fort Knox is, Fort Knox is a whole lot bigger than 55 square feet.
Well, all the gold in the world has been discovered. They said it would fit. I've heard this before.
Yeah.
And imagine they know what they're talking about. Well, it's real simple math to figure out how many square feet, cubic feet that is, cubic inches.
Yeah,
to
but
get
it's
the value.
Yeah,
of
it's
all this gold.
Well, it's if it's true, it's amazing. I can't figure out why Fort Knox is as big as it is. But Dixon, thanks for the call. It's an interesting factoid. 1-866-889-8894. Share this little bit of email with you in just a moment. And what is Ken Blackwell up to now? More on that 20 minutes after the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer. The new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel? Seattle?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Firstly, forgive me if I misunderstood, as I was a new listener, and it is often better to listen longer before spouting off, writes Paul Malessa in Tarpon Springs, Florida. But your blind hatred will force me not to come back. My blind hatred. This is fascinating, isn't it? He says, example, how dare you just keep spurting off about some $15 million figure when we are now up to $350 million, plus around the same by our private donations. I'm not sure what he's talking about here. I'm assuming, you know, Bush's $15 million and up to now $300. I've reported that straight up. I don't get it. He says, do you have any idea the machines and men we have helping also and how quickly they got there? Yeah, I think, as I said 2 days ago on the program, it's one of the, you know, I think Bush finally stepping up to the plate is something that, as much as I don't like or agree with George W. Bush, you know, I think it's good that he did it. God bless, you know, congratulations. Yeah, anyhow, he's did I hear you say donate to Doctors Without Borders? They're not even accepting donations. They're maxed out. Always living in the past around there? Well, yeah, they just announced that. And so I would recommend that people give money to Oxfam or to UNICEF. Doctors Without Borders goes in, does their thing, and then leaves when the disaster's over. And they allow people to donate money to specific causes, and they don't use that money for anything else, which is a really good thing. And they've accumulated enough money now for this particular disaster. But there are other organizations that go in and are there long after the immediate medical need is over. And those organizations still need a lot of money. You know, and Oxfam is among them, the UN organizations, the Red Cross, and so on. So, anyhow, this guy, there's a reason your opinions will remain on the fringe and most of your popular advertisers will be some type of penis power vitamin B. The last time I heard one of those ads was actually on Sean Hannity's show. He says, your viewpoints are so vile and full of hatred, it is called a peanut gallery. Really? I'm getting hate mail accusing me of hatred. I love it. I love it. Many of you will focus on the absurd points until we spit up blood while the whole world flies by and leaves you behind. This is real coherent here, Paul. Real coherent. He says, it's just always the same type of thing with whatever you people might call yourself. Hatred and a lack of respect for what you might consider the common man. Paul Malessa, part Tarpon Strings. What can I say? This is the face, or the voice, as it were, of people who have been indoctrinated by the right. This whole notion that hate is a tool, that hate is a useful thing, that if you can get people angry enough, you can divide them and then you can control them, and that is what has been going on largely for the last 15 or 20 years in the United States, particularly since the rise of right-wing radio, and particularly since the rise of right-wing hate radio, which is not all of right-wing radio, I will grant you, but a good chunk of it, a scary chunk of it. And it's just, this is not a healthy thing for our society. We really need to be bringing back some rational civil discourse here. Ohio's Republican Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell boasted of helping, quote, deliver Ohio for President Bush, saying he was, quote, truly pleased, end quote, to announce Bush had won Ohio even before the state's votes had been counted. This in a fundraising letter he sent out on December 31st. This was before the vote was certified. His use of the word deliver is sort of like Wally O'Dell's, you know, Diebold, also from Ohio, his letter saying he was going to help deliver the state of Ohio for George W. Bush. Without your enthusiasm, generous support, and vote, I'm afraid the president would have lost, Blackwell wrote to his donors. And an unapologetic liberal Democrat named John Kerry would have won. Thankfully, he says, you and I stopped that disaster from happening. Ken Blackwell, he helped stop the disaster of John Kerry being president from happening. Isn't this rather remarkable? It's just... He says, I have never shied away from giving the liberals fits, and I'm sure that with all the voter fraud we prevented... Oh, my. 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live, and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As individuals, governments, and organizations around the globe unite to support workers and their families who were devastated during the December 26 tsunami, U.S. labor organizations have begun looking inward to see what they can offer for the relief effort. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees took the lead by donating $10,000 to the nonprofit organization Doctors Without Borders. Cheryl Kelly is a spokesperson for the Federation.
We're reaching out to our fellow workers across the globe who've had their livelihoods and entire way of life taken away from them by this devastating event.
Kelly says it's important for U.S. labor to remember their brothers and sisters overseas.
We feel like it's our obligation to help our brothers abroad. During 9/11, we had many countries to come to our aid, and we feel, you know, that it's necessary and it's important for us, especially as one of the leading labor unions here in the U.S., to do what we can to help those who are in need.
And on the West Coast, the California Nurses Association has begun working closely with the Sri Lanka Public Services Nurses Union to funnel contributions to areas with the most need. The association is also asking some members to volunteer to travel and assist in a country that even before the tsunami was facing a shortage of 7,000 nurses.
The United Mine Workers of America is waging a battle to protect workers from corporate abuses in bankruptcy courts. UMWA Communications Director Doug Gibson says bankruptcy laws need to be reformed so companies can't use them to wipe out health benefits and union contracts and take away pensions.
They were written basically by pro-business members of Congress and banks. And in a bankruptcy court right now, the compensation to the workers that were injured by the bankruptcy falls far below compensation to vendors or corporate leaders. So the workers are really left out in the cold in bankruptcy court.
At the Kendleton coal mine in West Virginia, the UMWA is ready to use civil disobedience to protest use of the bankruptcy courts to throw miners out of work.
President Roberts has said he will engage in nonviolent disobedience down there, whether that means sitting in a road, blocking this mine entrance, whatever we have to do to let people know what's happening to American workers in federal bankruptcy court. It's a travesty. It really is.
The UMWA is in U.S. District Court in Ashland, Kentucky, on behalf of miners in West Virginia, Kentucky, Illinois, and Indiana to defend health care benefits promised to miners by a 1992 federal law, benefits now threatened by corporate bankruptcy actions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to getting kids talking, the nation's need for speech therapists is losing its voice. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that the nation will need 120,000 speech pathologists by 2012. And recent estimates put the number of licensed therapists at 94,000. A large number of those therapists will be retiring over the next few years. Improvements in the ability to diagnose speech impairments and higher rates of autism have led to a greater demand across the country.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
relentlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Yes, Ken Blackwell has written a letter telling the, well, not the voters of Ohio, it's only going out to people that he thinks can give a lot of money to his campaign for governor. You will recall when a reporter said to Ken Blackwell back during the campaign, well, what happens if Ohio is the next Florida? What if there is evidence that, as Catherine Harris committed vote fraud in Florida by bumping tens of thousands of African Americans off the voting rolls, what if your plans that have been alleged, Mr. Blackwell, what if your plans to have minimal numbers of voting machines in heavy Democratic areas, lots of voting machines in Republican areas, voter suppression efforts, what if these things rise to the level of scandal? What if Ohio is the next Florida? And he smiled and made the comment that his recollection, the best of his recollection, Catherine Harris's payoff for that, I don't remember the word he used, but reward for that, let's say, was a seat in Congress. And in fact, it was. Jeb rewarded her by helping her get elected to Congress, the United States Congress. And so Ken Blackwell now wants to run for governor of the state of Ohio. And he has already started. And in fact, on December 31st, he sent out this fundraising letter. He says, in the late hours of election night, I was truly pleased to announce President Bush had won a critical and clinching victory here in Ohio. Now, this was before the vote was entirely counted, right? On the belief that it was statistically impossible for Senator Kerry to recover. He says, so based on his belief, he called the election. And then he goes on to say, I've never shied away from giving the liberals fits, and I'm sure that with all the voter fraud we prevented during this last election, they will be looking to get even with me in my next political campaign. Yeah. It's remarkable. Yep, good old Kenneth Blackwell, soon to be, in his mind anyway, governor of the state of Ohio. Time will tell, Mr. Blackwell. Time will tell. Charles Sheehan Miles served as a tank crewman with the 24th Infantry Division during the 1991 Gulf War and was decorated for valor for helping rescue fellow tank crewmen from a burning tank during the battle at Ramallia. He was the founding executive director of the National Gulf War Research Center from 1995 to 97. One of the original co-founders of Veterans for Common Sense, he's now the executive director. He's also the author of a book called Prayer for Ramallia, a novel of the Gulf War, published in 2001 by Ex Libris. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I'm pleased you could be here. Why is it that the military, by and large, we're hearing so many voices coming out of the military, and mostly ex-military, because active military just, you know, there's this thing about not participating in politics, but so many military voices are coming forward with questions and concerns about Alberto Gonzalez and his support, the so-called torture memo, his support of basically abandoning the Geneva Conventions. Why would this be?
Well, I think it's because soldiers have the most to lose when it comes to the issue of torture, of abuse of prisoners of war. Both from the standpoint of if they themselves are taken prisoner, and because if we abrogate the Geneva Conventions, we're also setting a precedent that other countries might follow in future conflicts.
But
another really important key here is that the very values of the institution of the military really run counter to this, and you can see it in the fact that the first news we have had of Abu Ghraib came because a young E4 reported it to his superior officers and provided evidence, and because a group of military lawyers came out, went outside the chain of command in order to leak documents.
But you know, Charles, according to Rush Limbaugh, This is just fun. These are just kids letting off steam with these prisoners, and that's something that you just kind of have to expect. And you know, I've heard many folks on Fox News and on the right basically asserting that we need to do what we need to do to get this information out of these people. Americans' lives are at stake. Why not simply just torture them? Why not export them to other countries that allow torture? These things that Alberto Gonzalez has written essentially in favor of.
Well, I would say it's very much the same argument Saddam Hussein used. We, as Americans, don't support this type of activity. Now, back to the argument you mentioned where people have said this is blowing off steam. I've gotten a lot of emails and comments from people saying, you know, this sexually humiliating stuff, it was nothing worse than what my frat party did to me. I've gotten an email that actually said that. But yeah. The bottom line is when you actually look at the documents and the investigations, and we've gotten thousands and thousands of pages through our joint lawsuit with the ACLU that documents what happened, we're not talking about just sexually humiliating stuff. We're talking about a little boy who was raped at Evergrande Prison. We're talking about the deaths of over 40 prisoners in the custody of the U.S. military. These are critical, critical issues, and I don't know anybody who has served in the military or who is serving today who would condone such activity.
Charles Sheehan Miles, the executive director right now of Veterans for Common Sense. Charles, I was reading through the Nuremberg trials, some of the transcripts of the Nuremberg trials last weekend. And in the opening statements, I don't have it right here in front of me, but essentially what they said was any nation, any leader of any nation, and those who collaborate with that leader, that launches a war of aggression is guilty of war crimes and will be held to account by the international community. These were American lawyers making these arguments, and American and British by and large, although the French were involved to some extent, but it was mostly the Americans and the Brits, and the Russians as well. But the American lawyer made this very impassioned point that should the leader of any country ever initiate a war of aggression against a country that was not either threatening them or had not attacked them, they must be held to account for war crimes. Do you believe that George W. Bush has committed a war crime?
Well, you know, that's a tough and complicated question, and I'm not sure I'm going to go there. And I'll tell you part of the reason why is that we, as an organization, opposed invading Iraq. That said, there's a couple of things that have, in some ways, changed that equation. Number one, in terms of the legalities, the occupation itself was eventually legitimized by the UN Security Council, and so the occupation, in terms of international law, is legal. And we've also got certain responsibilities under international law that we owe to the Iraqi people, both a moral responsibility and a legal responsibility to ensure the stability of that country. So while we opposed going to war with Iraq, we're very concerned that the mission, the end result of a secure and stable Iraq be achieved.
Let me get this right. You're saying that if a nation is not stable, that we should invade it, and that's justified? And if that's the case, how is Iraq stable?
That's
it seems to me a lot
saying.
More not stable now than it
what
was.
What I'm saying is that once we toppled their government and destroyed their infrastructure, we owe a responsibility to fix it.
Okay.
I don't believe that there's a military solution to this problem, but there's no question the United States, as a nation, owes to the Iraqi people to help them bring their country back to stability.
Yeah, at this point, clearly.
Yeah.
So back to Alberto Gonzalez. Gonzalez has suggested that that there are circumstances under which the President of the United States could legally authorize torture. Do you think that there are any circumstances that would be appropriate?
No.
No.
No question. It's both. You're talking about a violation of U.S. law, international law, and beyond that, it's a violation of our values.
Have we committed torture?
Absolutely.
So,
unfortunately.
So should be held responsible for that?
Well, under the current circumstances, it's hard to say. One of the things that we would like to see is a real full and open investigation. A number of organizations and former military leaders have called for a 9/11-style independent panel to investigate not just Abu Ghraib, but the whole prisoner abuse scandal. I think that's going to be necessary.
Yeah.
Bottom line is that we as a country have to hold our leaders accountable. It's very, very troubling to me that we've court-martialed a handful of lower-ranking enlisted soldiers for carrying out the policies that their leaders endorsed.
Yeah, and this was a policy that was penned by Gonzalez and was it Rumsfeld or Bush? I mean, who signed off on this thing?
Well, several people are there. I mean, Gonzalez made the recommendations to the president. The president issued the order which exempted the Taliban and al-Qaeda from the Geneva Conventions. We've got documents from our lawsuit which indicate that Secretary Rumsfeld directly signed off on specific interrogation techniques that at least the FBI personnel thought constituted torture. And it disturbed them enough that they reported it to their superiors. There's at least one indication that a presidential executive order may exist because it was referenced in some internal FBI documents. But no one's seen that memo, and the White House denies its existence. So we don't know for sure.
Interesting. Now, the United States Supreme Court has gotten in on this. The Supreme Court ruled last June that citizens and non-citizens detained by the government, even those the so-called enemy combatants, have a right to due process of some sort. John Paul Stevens was quoting King John in 1215, the Magna Carta, right? Quote, that no free man should be imprisoned save by the judgment of his peers or by the law of the land, end quote. And the analysis, quote, traced the limits on executive power through English common law, on through the Federalist Papers, and down a long line of precedents forged in some of the darkest hours of the nation, including the Civil War and World War II. We have an administration now that is suggesting that they have the right to hold people forever, for the rest of their lives, in prison, wherever, whenever they want, under whatever circumstances they want.
I lost you there for just a second.
Yeah, okay. We're talking with Charles Shin Miles. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. We have an administration that is suggesting that they have the right to hold people in prison without those people having access to an attorney, without having access to due process, or very slow process, certainly not speedy trials. What's the position of your organization on this and on Judge Gonzalez's participation in this?
Right. Well, we swore an oath as veterans, or as when we were in the active duty military, to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that enshrines all the issues of due process that are required. And that's really what is behind our opposition to Gonzalez. The idea that anyone could be detained or disappeared without counsel, without charge, it's very, very troubling.
And yet it's going on. I mean, what are we doing? What can be done about this? I mean, after the Supreme Court hearing, after the Supreme Court ruling, everyone was expecting, you know, okay, these guys, they're all going. They're still dragging their feet down there.
Sure. In fact,
we're talking about setting up another concentration camp to move some of the Guantanamo people into.
Right. And in the last couple of days, there's been some discussion about literally lifetime internment for people who've never had charges filed against them.
Right.
There's no question that that's wrong, and it's something that at least the rulings of the Supreme Court thus far have reflected that sense that our Constitution doesn't allow for that sort of thing. The question is, you know, do we see the pendulum swing back, or how far does the administration go in this?
Or do you think the administration...
The Senate asked the right questions.
Yeah, or do you think the administration is simply waiting, figuring they can stall for a year until Rehnquist retires and maybe Sandra Day O'Connor or somebody else, and they get a couple of more Gonzalez types on the Supreme Court. In fact, Gonzalez will probably be the second nominee. He won't certainly be the first to the Supreme Court. And then they can revisit this and simply go back and say, hey, you know, this Constitution, forget it.
I think that's entirely possible. You know, I will say we're a nonpartisan organization.
Fascism isn't a partisan issue, I don't think. Right.
It's really it's an issue about American values. That's something that we're very concerned that in some ways we've really drifted away from this. I wouldn't have believed it, because I've been working with media for 10 years, and I've never gotten hate mail from an actual news organization. But after we put out our press advisor and the notifying people of our press conference this morning, I actually got two emails from talk radio shows. One was a Clear Channel news director, and one was from another one that basically said, "You guys are wrong. You're traitors."
Traitors.
One of them said, "You know, who appointed you to speak for veterans?" And I was astonished, because what kind of a climate do we live in where people who are supposedly journalists are, you know, attacking the subjects of the news? It just doesn't make any sense.
Are taking advocacy positions. Well, yeah. let's extend that question then in the minute we have left here. Not to put it in confrontationally, who appointed you to speak for veterans, but how many veterans do you think that you speak for? Do you think that you're speaking for, you know, the majority of veterans share your opinion, a minority? What's your sense of it?
I think it's tough to say. I mean, we have 12,000 members, and we're growing very, very rapidly, and that's represented by veterans going back to World War II all the way up to currently serving active duty folks who are in Iraq today. In terms of, you know, what's the percentage? What our experience has been is that the military population largely reflects the same political divisions as the rest of our population.
Yeah, so it's probably about 50-50. Charles, we've got to wrap it up there. Thanks so much for being with us today. Charles Sheehan Miles of Veterans for Common Sense. I do appreciate it. It's a Tom Hartman program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio.
It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century, but Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Charles Sheehan Miles is still on the phone with us. Charles, I wanted first of all to give you an opportunity to plug your organization, Veterans for Common Sense. The website, please.
It's www.veteransforcommonsense.org.
Great. Veteransforcommonsense.org. Secondly, I wanted to say, buck up. Don't feel bad if you're getting hate mail. In fact, feel good about it. I opened this show by reading hate mail that I was getting from you. I've got two bullet holes in the side of my car out in front of the house here. That means you're doing something right, in my opinion. I think it's just marvelous that you guys are out speaking out and speaking the truth. I just want one more time, I want this point made. We only have about 2.5 minutes here at the top of the hour, but I want this point made, and you made it so eloquently, and I just kind of slid by it, so I want to return to it for our listeners. Why is it that the military in combat, the combat military, would argue against their having the right to torture or kill prisoners of war in order to get information from them?
Well, you know, the fundamental values that our country stands for are enshrined in the Constitution that we all swore to protect, and that includes due process, it includes, freedom of speech, it includes not having cruel and unusual punishment. These are all things that we as veterans swore to defend and that we believe in. Most people who join the military are idealists. I mean, it is an all-volunteer military. And the fact is that those values are being compromised.
So, but these are the things that you guys are fighting for.
Folks at the White House.
Yeah, and these are the things that we are fighting for. In other words, these are the values that we're fighting for. And not to mention the fact that what happens to our soldiers, what happens to you guys if you get captured and some other country says, well, you know, the U.S. signed the Geneva Convention, so did we, but they're not following it. Why should we?
Well, it's actually an interesting point, and it's one that Gonzalez raised in his January 2002 memo. By not granting protections to the Geneva Conventions to the enemy in that war, we gave up for our own soldiers the right for them to appeal to the Geneva Conventions for their own protection. In short, we took away protections from our own troops. So that's one issue.
Yeah.
You know, the other issue is that it's really undercutting the troops on the ground in Iraq. Whether or not you agreed whether the war was right or wrong, or whether or not we should have invaded or not.
Torture is.
I think we all agree that we want Iraq to be.
We want it to be stable. I agree with you. Charles Shin Miles with Veterans for Common Sense, veteransforcommonsense.org. Thanks so much for being with us today. I do appreciate it. Thank you,
Thanks
sir.
Thanks for having me on.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Where being progressive never felt so good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As individuals, governments, and organizations around the globe unite to support workers and their families who were devastated during the December 26 tsunami, U.S. labor organizations have begun looking inward to see what they can offer for the relief effort. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees took the lead by donating $10,000 to the nonprofit organization Doctors Without Borders. Cheryl Kelly is a spokesperson for the Federation.
We're reaching out to our fellow workers across the globe who've had their livelihoods and entire way of life taken away from them by this devastating event.
Kelly says it's important for U.S. labor to remember their brothers and sisters overseas.
We feel like it's our obligation to help our brothers abroad. During 9/11, we had many countries to come to our aid, and we feel, you know, that it's necessary and it's important for us, especially as one of the leading labor unions here in the U.S., to do what we can to help those who are in need.
And on the West Coast, the California Nurses Association has begun working closely with the Sri Lanka Public Services Nurses Union to funnel contributions to areas with the most need. The association is also asking some members to volunteer to travel and assist in a country that even before the tsunami was facing a shortage of 7,000 nurses.
The United Mine Workers of America is waging a battle to protect workers from corporate abuses and bankruptcy courts. UMWA Communications Director Doug Gibson says bankruptcy laws need to be reformed so companies can't use them to wipe out health benefits, end union contracts, and take away pensions.
They were written basically by pro-business members of Congress and banks. And in a bankruptcy court right now, the compensation to the workers that were injured by the bankruptcy falls far below compensation to vendors or corporate leaders. So the workers are really left out in the cold in bankruptcy court.
At the Cannleton coal mine in West Virginia, the UMWA is ready to use civil disobedience to protest use of the bankruptcy courts to throw miners out of work.
President Roberts has said he will engage in nonviolent disobedience down there, whether that means sitting in a road, blocking this mine entrance, whatever we have to do to let people know what's happening to American workers in federal bankruptcy court. It's a travesty. It really is.
The UMWA is in U.S. District Court in Ashland, Kentucky on behalf of miners in West Virginia, Kentucky, Illinois, and Indiana to defend health care benefits promised to miners by a 1992 federal law, benefits now threatened by corporate bankruptcy actions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to getting kids talking, the nation's need for speech therapists is losing its voice. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that the nation will need 120,000 speech pathologists by 2012. And recent estimates put the number of licensed therapists at 94,000. A large number of those therapists will be retiring over the next few years. Improvements in the ability to diagnose speech impairments and higher rates of autism have led to a greater demand across the country.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament?
How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Home Depot is coming to my town, riding in on tracks of gold, courtesy of us taxpayers. This is not merely another of Home Depot's big box stores, mind you, but by gollies, a high-tech data center. To get the giant corporation to choose Austin, state and local officials approached it in the professional manner that corporations now expect. By frantically hurling huge sackfuls of taxpayers' money at them, desperately hoping that our sacks are fuller than those being hurled by other cities. In this case, our sacks contain more than $30 million, and, lucky us, Home Depot grabbed them. Our public officials are now peacocking around over this deal, bragging that they're delivering 500 jobs to we the people, averaging $58,000 a year in pay. Actually, though, you wouldn't get one paying $58,000. That average includes the salary, bonuses, and such of those up in the new data center's executive suite. Averages, you see, are tricksters. If you are paid $20,000, for example, and the top dog gets $200,000, you're averaging $110,000 each. Home Depot's package includes nearly $6 million in a special tax break from the Austin School District. Yes, that means $6 million that should go to the education of school kids will not, for district officials have given this corporation an exemption from paying its school taxes. Yet the Austin School Board is trying to pull a fast one on us by asserting that the state reimburses school districts for any revenue they lose when they dole out tax breaks to corporations. As one board member put it, there is no cost to the Austin taxpayer. Earth to school board. The Austin taxpayer is also a state taxpayer. The tax giveaway to Home Depot still comes from our pockets, and it's still $6 million that could have been added to education, but now won't be. This is Jim Hightower saying, Home Depot is super rich. Why shouldn't it pay its taxes like our homegrown businesses do?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And if you want to drop into our chat room, tomhartman.com will get you there. 10 adults and a teenager who showed up to sing hymns and carry signs peacefully at Philadelphia's latest, Robert Knight writes on the Concerned Women for America website, Philadelphia's latest homosexual celebration, were arrested on Sunday and spent 21 hours in jail. Special guests sent out a press release promoting Brian Failing, who is the senior trial attorney with the Mississippi-based American Family Association, involved in a number of cases across the country opposing gay rights. Their website, www.afa.org. And, Brian, your website, or this news release I got, says 47 years in prison for reading the Bible out loud is a headline. But when I look at...
You know,
Yeah, Tom, that does seem like an overstatement when you look at it and you kind of pinch yourself and say, well, those crazy Christians, there they go again.
Well, here, I'm looking, Brian, at the actual charges, and I'm seeing ethnic intimidation, a second-degree felony hate crime, criminal conspiracy, first-degree felony, possession of instruments of crime, first-degree misdemeanor, reckless endangerment of another person, second-degree felony, riot, third-degree felony, failure to disperse, second-degree misdemeanor, disorderly conduct, and obstructing a highway. I don't see the word Bible in there anywhere.
No, what happened with that? Let me explain to you what happened. My clients went to the Outfest, which is a celebration, coming out celebration by homosexuals in the city of Philadelphia. It's co-sponsored with the city. And they've been there before, my clients, and they go there and they evangelize. They carry signs and they sing and they quote scripture verses. And had done it pretty much without incident in the past. Well, this year, in the Philadelphia Gay News, a week in advance, a gentleman by the name of Chuck Voltz announced that he was forming a group called the Pink Angels, whose sole purpose would be to surround my clients and interfere. And he used those words with their message so they couldn't be heard, and perhaps with the idea, he said, that they would be so frustrated they would leave. And so my clients went there. Now, Tom, before I move on, because I think it does sound extraordinary, on its face, and I wouldn't be here talking with you if it, in fact, wasn't true, demonstrably so. When I say demonstrably so, fortuitously, an independent film company from San Francisco called Enough Said Productions, which is not associated with my clients or our group or Christianity in any way, followed. They're doing a documentary on the First
Amendment.
Yeah,
Brian, I saw it on your website, on AFA.org.
Okay, you did see. Okay, that was a...
And it looked to me like the guy who got arrested, Michael, what's his name, the guy that you're defending, right, that he had been told to move, and he didn't move, and he got arrested.
Yeah, did you see the beginning where the police acknowledged that my clients had a right to be there, could go wherever they wanted, but they would be followed? And, Tom, let's just take your last statement, assertion, and say that, okay, Michael and the 10 others should have moved, and they didn't. What happened, though, was they got arrested. They were thrown in jail anywhere from 1 to 10 days, by the way. And then they are now facing, four of them, 47 years in prison. If you can tell me that you looked at that videotape with any degree of intellectual honesty and say that you found felonies and a whole host of misdemeanors in there, I'd say that you and I converse in a different dimension terms of what this country stands for.
First of all, I have to say that a few seconds or even a few minutes of videotape does not replace being there. And the police officers who were there made the decisions that they made. But I think the larger issue is, I'm assuming that you believe in our jury system here in the United States.
In Philadelphia, I don't believe in anything anymore. I've never seen, let's...
Well, I'm assuming that as an attorney, Brian, that you believe in our court system and that you realize that even if you get a jury in Philadelphia that doesn't like you, you can appeal to, state appeals courts, federal appeals courts, all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Sure.
Here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line, Brian. Ultimately, somebody is going to decide whether or not there were crimes committed here, right? And even if it ends up at the Supreme Court, somebody's going to decide that. And so for us to sit here and say, well, it was a crime that they were arrested, or it was a crime that they were there, I think would be a little gratuitous, or that's not the right way. We would be leaping to conclusions on either of our part. Can you give me that?
Well, let me explain to you why not, Tom. I think in the abstract, that assertion sounds reasonable. But we have all of the events. So the city has had every opportunity to present contrary evidence, and of course they don't, because the videotape contains everything. Now, the First Amendment,
it doesn't contain everything.
That you must be a champion of the First Amendment.
No, what you're trying to do here is argue the case, and what I'm saying is the case is going to be argued in court. I'm curious about the larger issue here, and that is, why are your clients out following around people who are, gay people who are having a festival?
Well, actually, that's not the larger issue. That's a diversionary issue. But they're Christians. They evangelize. That's what Christians do. They go where they think people need to hear the gospel.
Brian, I'm a Christian, and I feel no urge to go out and yell at gay people.
Sure. Well, they weren't yelling. And if you watch the videotape again,
no. What I saw on the videotape was a bullhorn.
To singing through the bullhorn over the whistles and the jeering of the Pink Angels. You got to provide context, Tom. Yeah. I'm looking for an intellectually honest discussion somewhere along the line, and I'm not getting it from you.
So,
it doesn't sound like.
So am I, and I think you're doing a good job of defending yourself, Brian, here, or presenting your position. But I still don't get it. I have not yet been able to figure out when hate became a Christian value.
But you've assumed something that's not in play, and that's that the Bible and loving these homosexuals by preaching the gospel, as my clients are doing, is hate. And that's, you know, there's a cultural pathology, I think, that has taken hold here, and you are perhaps example A or B after the city of Philadelphia, that people who merely go out and present a view that's different than somebody else is hate. And, you know, I have a real problem with that.
Brian, the signs that I was seeing there in that video are the same signs that I saw when Fred Phelps came to my hometown.
No, don't even go there, Tom. I mean, that would be to attempt to brush my client.
Are you trying to tell me, Brian, that there were no signs saying that gays were going to go to hell?
There was a sign from a Leviticus 18:22. And if you listen to the videotape, you also heard Mike Markavich say, Jesus loves you and we love you. We're all sinners. I'm not sure how you get hate from there, and especially if you heard the tone in which the discussion took place. Now, look, reasonable minds can differ, and Christians can say, you know, I wouldn't have done it that way. But should you face 47 years in prison? I moved to the South from Seattle, and I'm unfamiliar with any abuse of power on this level against people pursuing their civil rights in the 50s and 60s.
Did your clients have a
permit
to be there?
Through utilization of the First Amendment. This is a First Amendment issue, and it's an abuse of power issue. And frankly, I thought, after I looked at your website, that you would view it and you would see the profound abuse of power. If you're telling me that you would rather see a jury decide the fate of four people who exercised their First Amendment rights and whether or not 47 years in prison ought to be on the table, again, you know,
what I'm saying, Brian, is very, very straightforward, is that I trust in our jury system. If your clients were merely exercising First Amendment rights and they were doing it in a way that was consistent with the laws of Philadelphia, I'm confident that they'll be acquitted.
But they shouldn't have to go through this. The First Amendment. Let me read you a quote from the United States.
Well, you could say the same thing about people who tried to show up outside Bush-Cheney rallies and got arrested. I mean, there's
were they hit with 47 years in prison charges and felonies?
Well, some were hit with something close to that. Yeah, yeah. And
no, they weren't. I'm familiar with. And you know what? I was outraged as well at the thought that whether it's Republicans or Democrats, I don't care if we're talking about PETA right here. This is an abuse of power that's unprecedented in our country's history in terms of charging for exercise of First Amendment rights. Can I read to you what the United States Supreme Court has said about this? Because the city of Philadelphia has said that because the homosexuals didn't want to hear the message, that preaching was hateful. Here's what the United States Supreme Court has said. The right to speak freely sets us apart from totalitarian regimes. A function of free speech is to invite dispute. It may indeed best serve its high purpose when it induces a condition of unrest, creates dissatisfaction.
In other words, you don't yell fire in a theater and all that sort of thing. But did your clients have a permit to be there?
They didn't need one. It's what we call in the law a public forum.
Did the gays who were there have a permit to be there?
Pardon?
Was the parade permitted?
It wasn't a parade. It was
the event, whatever it was. Was it permitted?
Outfest people set up booths. It was regular business was going on. In other words, there was also the outfest, but normal business.
But the bottom line here, Brian, isn't it that those folks who were there, the gay folks who were there, had a permit to be there? They had the permission of the city to be there, and your clients did not.
No, my clients had a First Amendment right to be there, and the city of Philadelphia has acknowledged that. So you're attempting to assert.
But what I'm suggesting, Brian, is that your First Amendment, your First Amendment right, it's like, you know, my right to swing my arm ends at the end of your nose. If your clients attempt to assert speech with a bullhorn was drowning out somebody else's attempt to assert their speech or have their party or whatever, that's a violation of the law. If you live next door to me and I put speakers outside my house and I have an incredibly loud party, you can have the police come to my house. This has nothing to do with free speech.
You're being dishonest in representing what happened. It didn't happen. If that happened that way, I can guarantee you we have a policy at our Center for Law and Policy. Christians who assert themselves in that fashion, we do not represent. They may be entitled to a defense, but they're not entitled to our defense. So if what you asserted were in fact true, I can guarantee you I wouldn't be on the phone with you talking about a profound abuse of power on behalf of my clients. So what you're asserting, please, is simply not true.
So what you're suggesting, Brian, then, is merely that the police department hates Christians in Philadelphia?
I don't know what else to conclude that at least the First Amendment has suffered a nuclear blast in Philadelphia.
Because your clients are Christians.
It reeks of bad faith.
Because your clients are Christians.
No, because they had 3 felonies and 5 misdemeanors for doing what the Constitution guarantees them the right to
do. Why?
The district attorney's office has I abhor the abuse of power by
Why would they do this?
Democrats, independents.
Why would they pick on you like this?
The why is, well, we're asking for a DOJ investigation that could get to the bottom. We filed a federal lawsuit. We've asserted bad faith. I can say unequivocally that bad faith was a part of this. And we will discover the why. We know that bad faith
but,
on its
But you're out asserting right now that this is part of now that Christmas is over and so we can't anymore say, oh, these evil liberals or whatever are trying to take Christ out of Christmas. Mm-hmm. Now it's, they're trying to stop Christians from speaking out. 47 years in jail for reading the Bible out loud. Isn't that a little disingenuous, Brian?
No. Do you know what the prosecutor said in court? He called it fighting words. He called it hate speech. And the judge parroted that back. You know, I'm telling you.
Brian, there's a lot of language in the Bible that if I just threw it at you, you would consider hate speech, I'm sure.
Nice try, Tom, but they didn't throw it at him. They spoke it.
Yeah.
They spoke it. And if they're, you know, maybe the First Amendment doesn't apply to Christians in your mind. Maybe you disagree with what they did. But God help us if that's true. If your mindset.
Brian, if your clients were exercising simply First Amendment rights and they were doing it in a way that was appropriate and legal, I am absolutely in agreement with you. However, I have a hard time believing that the city of Philadelphia would put people in jail for that.
You know what? You don't have a hard time believing that President Bush abuses his power. Why would you have a hard time believing that Lynn Abraham, the elected DA, would abuse her power? Well, trust me, she did, and it's going to be uncovered.
Okay, we'll see. Time will tell. Brian Failing, the attorney for the Mississippi-based American Family Association, website www.afa.org. Brian, thanks for being with us today.
Tom, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Bye.
Good luck. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's all about framing. The stuff we've been talking about in our Tools for Activism course, our NLP course, which we're going to get into right after the bottom of the hour here. We're going to talk about how George Herbert Walker Bush turned Michael Dukakis into Willie Horton. But this fellow that we just had on with the AFA, he kept trying to frame the argument about the First Amendment when it's really about, in my opinion, his organization out there trying to stifle the civil rights of gay Americans, period. That's it. Bottom line, in my opinion. And he was saying, oh, no, they're First Amendment. Yeah, bring it back. 25 minutes past the hour. Time for a report from the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner is with us. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. They've been leaking like a sieve here. And, of course, at the end of yesterday, and I don't think I discussed it on your program, they're talking about 4% now of people's salary would be going into these private accounts, these Social Security accounts. Well,
hey, Ellen,
if you
Ellen.
4%. Of everybody's salary, Tom, and stuck it in the stock market, what it would do to the stock market. I mean, even Alan Greenspan, no liberal.
Hey, Ellen, can you, Ellen?
Bananas.
Ellen? Ellen?
Yes.
You are just really breaking up badly for some reason. Are you?
I am?
Yeah.
Does that sound a little better?
Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, but same one I'm always on, same place.
Huh. It must be you're overmodulating. Can you try talking a little more softly?
And how's
maybe,
that?
That's
that
fine.
A little better?
Yeah, when you talk softly, it's fine. Okay.
Okay. So, essentially, it's 4% now, Tom, they want to put into the stock market. And even old, you know, not liberal, Alan Greenspan was concerned about 2% of the total Social Security, you know, people's salaries going into the stock market. Well, if you have 4%, things really begin to change dramatically, and the stock market would get very overheated.
Yeah.
So they're talking about indexing things to inflation, not to salaries. They're talking about putting 4% of people's money into the stock market. I think it's just, I mean, it is a prescription for disaster.
Yeah, this is going to get more and more obvious that what these guys are suggesting is going to destroy Social Security as we know it. I mean, it's going to utterly destroy it. Ellen, this line that we have you on is just, it's, for some reason, ooh, it's, I'm just getting this continual pop. So I'm gonna have to pop it off. If you want to, can you real quickly dial me back on the other phone number you have for us?
Yes, we will do so.
On the 802 number? Okay, thanks. I'm gonna just drop this, and we'll figure out the rest of that. It may be the phone line. It may be the phone. I don't know. We've been fiddling with our automation equipment here. The stuff. Have you contacted your senator, by the way? Let me just put in this one last plug. Have you contacted your senator and said, please stand with the House of Representatives, with John Conyers and the House of Representatives, on behalf of challenging the electors in the state of Ohio on Thursday, on tomorrow? This is a very significant thing. Also tonight is the DFA meetup meetings. Hey, is that Ellen?
Is that any better?
It is.
Okay.
That's fine. Okay, go for it.
So this, what essentially is happening is these Bush people are leaking what's going on with Social Security at a very rapid rate.
Uh-huh.
And although they can try and control people who work at the White House, I ran into some number crunchers, and they are not able to leak those people. I mean, they're not able to control those people's leaks. And so essentially the number crunchers up at Social Security are leaking all this information.
And so the word is getting out, basically, that the Bush administration intends to set up a system that will help the rich and screw the poor.
Well, that's right. And we'll cut benefits, and we'll also try and, you know, prop up the stock market.
Yeah, and help out his good buddies in Wall Street. It's incredible.
Exactly.
And you're actually hearing this from people within the Social Security Administration.
I am.
That's,
yes.
That's remarkable.
You know, it's amazing. You run into people in the oddest of places. Sports games, etc.
Yeah.
And they're telling you stuff that they shouldn't be telling.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they're telling you, Ellen, so that you can tell our listeners. And I do appreciate your sharing that with us. Thanks so much for the call today from the Talk Radio News Service. And we will talk to you tomorrow, Ellen.
You got it.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye now. It's 29 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, exposing the con in conservative.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own.
Let go, I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As individuals, governments, and organizations around the globe unite to support workers and their families who were devastated during the December 26 tsunami, U.S. labor organizations have begun looking inward to see what they can offer for the relief effort. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees took the lead by donating $10,000 to the nonprofit organization Doctors Without Borders. Cheryl Kelly is a spokesperson for the Federation.
We're reaching out to our fellow workers across the globe who've had their livelihoods and entire way of life taken away from them by this devastating event.
Kelly says it's important for U.S. labor to remember their brothers and sisters overseas.
We feel like it's our obligation to help our brothers abroad. During 9/11, we had many countries to come to our aid, and we feel, you know, that it's necessary and it's important for us, especially as one of the leading labor unions here in the U.S., to do what we can to help those who are in need.
And on the West Coast, the California Nurses Association has begun working closely with the Sri Lanka Public Services Nurses Union to funnel contributions to areas with the most need. The association is also asking some members to volunteer to travel and assist in a country that even before the tsunami was facing a shortage of 7,000 nurses.
The United Mine Workers of America is waging a battle to protect workers from corporate abuses and bankruptcy courts. UMWA Communications Director Doug Gibson says bankruptcy laws need to be reformed so companies can't use them to wipe out health benefits and union contracts and take away pensions.
They were written basically by pro-business members of Congress and banks. And in a bankruptcy court right now, the compensation to the workers that were injured by the bankruptcy falls far below compensation to vendors or corporate leaders. So the workers are really left out in the cold in bankruptcy court.
At the Cannleton coal mine in West Virginia, the UMWA is ready to use civil disobedience to protest use of the bankruptcy courts to throw miners out of work.
President Roberts has said he will engage in nonviolent disobedience down there, whether that means sitting in a road, blocking this mine entrance, whatever we have to do to let people know what's happening to American workers in federal bankruptcy court. It's a travesty. It really is.
The UMWA is in U.S. District Court in Ashland, Kentucky, on behalf of miners in West Virginia, Kentucky, Illinois, and Indiana to defend health care benefits promised to miners by a 1992 federal law, benefits now threatened by corporate bankruptcy actions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to getting kids talking, the nation's need for speech therapists is losing its voice. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that the nation will need 120,000 speech pathologists by 2012, and recent estimates put the number of licensed therapists at 94,000. A large number of those therapists will be retiring over the next few years. Improvements in the ability to diagnose speech impairments and higher rates of autism have led to a greater demand across the country.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've been howling in my sleep.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This is our regular Tuesday afternoon. I had held today on Wednesday. Tools for Activism course using the tools of NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and others as well. And what I want to talk about today is the way that we store information in our brain and how politicians are becoming very successful at using this. Now marketers, advertising in general, have known about this for some time, and you will find this in advertising, but in politics it's being used in a very, very extraordinary and in many cases, in my opinion, insidious way. I saw this exact same thing happening in the Republican ads this year. The Willie Horton ads are probably more well-remembered, but I saw the same thing in the Republican ads this year where they would show John Kerry in pointillated is one of the words for it, where the photo seemed kind of faded and dotted out whenever the Republicans showed a photo of John Kerry. And then they would show, you know, Bush and everything in full color and, you know, good production values and all that kind of thing. This is a more simple example of it. It was interesting. I didn't so much see this. In fact, I don't recall any example of it, and I don't think this is my own personal filter, because I was expecting it out of the Democratic ads. But, you know, so do we call that Democratic incompetence or Democratic unwillingness to go into an area that shouldn't be going? I don't know. Well, but in any case, here, this is how it works. The word for this, by the way, for those of you who are NLP nuts, is submodalities, but I'm not gonna use that again because I don't want to get into techie speak here. Here's the bottom line: the way that we store information in our brain, the way that the mind knows to store something, is because there is an emotion associated with it. And we've talked about this in the past: how the stronger the emotion, the stronger the storage. And as you know, using motivation systems and things, if you can work up a strong emotion around a moving toward pleasure or even a moving away from pain motivation strategy, that strong emotion will be a strong and powerful anchor that will keep that thought or that idea or that ideal or that vision or that story, whatever it may be, that will hold it in place and keep it there. On the other hand, we sort the brain, the way that the mind sorts information, is not by emotion, but by sound and pictures. And here's how it works. This is a fascinating thing that they discovered back in the 60s and 70s when they were putting together this whole NLP thing. That if you ask somebody to describe an experience that they had that was, say, a minor annoyance, you know, like getting cut off in traffic, They may, now everybody does it differently. Everybody has a different way of storing things. But they may, for example, say, when you ask them, well, where's the picture of that? They may say, well, it's over there. And they'll point to an area that's, say, 10 feet away in front of them. And you say, is it color or black and white? And they'll say, well, it's black and it's color, let's say. And does it have a frame around it? Yes. Do you hear sound? No. It's whatever. See, it could be either one of all these things. But if you get all of the different variables that make up that picture, so let's say, for example, that this is a color picture that's 7 feet away, that's about 3 feet in diameter, that has a frame around it, there's no sound associated with it, they don't see themselves in it, all of these things, the various dimensions of it, of this picture. And then you ask them to remember another time when they felt a very similar emotion, but another completely different event, and ask them where, you know, what that, you know, about that, you'll discover that it's a similar picture. I mean, it's a completely different event, but it's in the same, roughly the same distance, and the same, it's held in the same way. Whereas if you ask them about a picture of when they felt great joy, or even a negative emotion, great shame or sorrow or something like that, it will be different. It'll be larger. It'll be in color and black, or in black and white instead of color. Whatever, it will be somehow different. This reveals the sorting or storage system of the brain, the way that in our minds we sort and store information. Now, if you can get access to a person's sorting system, you can change the meaning of events in their mind. Very powerful statement. And I'm telling you, everybody in Madison Avenue understands this, and the Republicans have been using this for a long time, very successfully, starting with the George Herbert Walker Bush campaign. And what they did with that campaign was they had these ads with Willie Horton, and they put out pictures of him in a particular way, the black and white with a particular type of music behind them and particular production values, the motion slowed down a little bit, all that kind of stuff. And they anchored that. In other words, people saw that enough times that they just had this awful feeling in the pit of their stomachs when they saw this murderer rapist on TV. And then once they had done that, they started showing Michael Dukakis in in seemingly issue ads, more innocuous ads, but using that same submodality set, that same set of the same video qualities, the same kind of music qualities. And so what it did was it brought up that same emotion and morphed in people's minds over time Michael Dukakis into Willie Horton, and or vice versa, as the case may be. So we store emotion. We store memories by emotion, but we use sound and pictures as our filing system. Now, there's a way that you can use this personally in your life, and that it's used in therapy, and that really illustrates this. And for this, I have asked Glenn in our chat room to come on the line with us. Glenn's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Glenn.
Hi, Tom.
And the reason I asked Glenn is because Glenn has actually been in a workshop where I taught this stuff. And what was it? St. Louis? Was that the last
yeah,
workshop we did on this?
St. Louis and Chicago. Let's see. What was the one in Virginia, yeah. Norfolk.
There you go. Norfolk, yeah. And the reason why is because Glenn is a coach for people with ADHD. And Coach Glenn is his handle in the chat room. And you use this kind of stuff in your work. And that's what I was teaching. But I asked you if you'd be a guinea pig. And you volunteered. I'm assuming that this is still a voluntary phone call.
Yes.
Okay, great. Just have to have that on the record. One of the neat things about this kind of stuff, by the way, is that you don't need to get it. We don't need to know the details. Although, in this case, just to illustrate it, I'm going to ask you to share some of the details with us, Glenn, if that's okay.
Okay.
What I'd like you to do is think of a time, without telling us the details yet, think of a time in the recent past that was a minor negative emotion, a minor annoyance or, upset or something. Not a big deal, just something. And something that you just as soon rather not feel bad about anymore, but that right at the moment you have kind of a negative feeling around.
Okay.
Okay, is it one that ultimately, when we're all done with this exercise, you're willing to share with us? Because if you're not, that's fine, and I just won't ask you to share it with us.
Well, can this be? Explain again the type of event you want me to remember.
I'm trying to respect your privacy here.
Okay, just the type, something that I wanted to happen that didn't happen, or an accident that happened.
Anything like that. Anything that's a minor negative emotion. What we're going to do is we're going to turn a negative emotion into a neutral emotion, basically. Right?
Okay. Right. I've seen
this. So you've got an event. Yeah. And so you've got an event, right?
Yes.
And now when you look at the picture of that event, is it a color or black and white?
Color.
And how far away from you is it?
6-7 feet.
Okay. Is there sound associated with it?
No, not yet.
Okay. Is it a movie or is it a still picture?
It's a movie.
Okay. And do you see yourself in it, or do you see it as if you were there?
As if I was there. Well, it's like I'm looking at a scene in front of me of in a restaurant.
Of the event, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, and you don't see Glenn in it. You're looking at it through the eyes of Glenn as when you were there. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not seeing two people there. I'm just looking out from as if I didn't exist behind my eyes.
Yeah. Okay. And what word would you use to describe the emotion that this event evokes for you?
Regret.
Okay, fine. Now, I'd like you to take that regret movie and, first of all, push it a little farther away from you in your mind. And now I want you to turn it black and white. And just let me know when you've done that.
Okay.
All right. Now, first of all, do you notice any change in how you feel about it so far?
Well, it immediately seemed much more in the past.
Interesting. Yeah, because this is a very common thing, by the way. Okay, great. Now, what I'd like you to do is I would like you to see yourself in that picture. So you're disassociating yourself from it. You're seeing it as if it's a movie that you made, and you're in that movie. So you see yourself in the picture.
Right.
And I want you to fast forward it all the way to the end and freeze frame it at the very end.
Okay.
You know, the resolution, as it were. And now, in just a moment, I'm going to ask you to play this movie backwards in your head. Only this time, before you do this, I want you to paint rainbow colors over the movie. And I want you to take the ears of all the other people involved and pull them out and make them into donkey ears, you know, like in Pinocchio.
Uh-huh.
And I want you to come up with the silliest music that you can think of, whatever for you is funny, silly music. For some people, it's circus music. For some people, it's Oompa Oompa music. You know, whatever it may be, the silliest, funniest music you can think of. And as you run this movie backwards in just a moment, you're going to hear that music. You're going to see the movie running backwards with these funny colors through it and all these people with these donkey ears. And everybody, of course, is going to be talking backwards. You know, they're going to be like Donald Duck, you know, the way people do when movies run backwards. And they'll be moving backwards like, you know, in a bad Charlie Chaplin movie. Ready?
Yeah. One question.
Sure.
Am I to impose the rainbow colors over the black and white image?
Yep.
Or?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
Got it? Okay. Now run it backwards in your mind right now from the end all the way back to the beginning and then stop it at the beginning. Got it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. How do you feel about it now?
Well, it wasn't that big a deal.
But I thought it was.
Have
your feelings around it changed?
I feel like I was putting too much importance on it.
Uh-huh.
On one aspect of it.
That's great. See, now what you have just revealed is now this is the therapeutic context of it, but you know, as you can see how powerful this is, you can see how it can be used in politics. What you've just revealed, Glenn, is the extraordinary thing about this is that we all have this place in our mind where we another storage place. You know, we have some that are called regret and some that are called joy and some that are called sorrow. We also have a storage place, and it's a fairly large one, and it's one of the most useful ones, and it's called, gee, I learned from that. You know, it would have been better if it hadn't happened, or maybe not. Maybe it's a good thing it happened because I learned from it, and it's over. It's in the past. And it sounds like you just moved that memory out of the regret storage place and into the, gee, I learned from that storage place, or whatever you would call it. Is that accurate, or migrating?
Well, that's fairly accurate, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about it a little differently.
That's exactly what you hear from people. They will say, I'm thinking about this differently. It looks differently to me. You can collapse all of the pictures, all of the frames of the movie down now into a single picture. And push it far away as far away as you feel is appropriate, and put it wherever you feel is appropriate, or just leave it how it is.
All right.
But now you have control over it. Right? You can decide. And see, the neat thing is that once an event, an emotion, a memory moves from an intense feeling like regret or embarrassment or shame or whatever, you know, whatever. Once it moves from that into, gee, I learned from that, it will stay in G, I learned from that, because that's a useful place. Your brain, your mind just knows that's the useful place for it. And what will happen is you'll start extracting lessons from it. You'll actually start, you know, over the next few hours, probably a couple of things will pop into your mind about actual lessons that you learned from that event that you can apply in your life. In fact, it's possible one has already popped into your mind.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm already thinking of one.
There you go. Okay. So you're a great example of that. Do you want to share any of the details of this event with us, Glenn? Or is...
Sure. I didn't pick any terribly horrible thing. My wife just had her birthday on the 1st of January, and I regretted that my present to her was just taking her out to brunch. The thing I learned from it is next year, if I just plan a little better, I can probably come up with something better than that.
There you go. Okay, good. And you can feel okay about that, and you can apologize to her, and she can, if that's
right.
Necessary.
Well, that's what she asked for her birthday, but I felt it was sort of because I just couldn't come up with any ideas.
Oh, interesting. So actually, It was the right thing in any case.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Glenn, thanks so much for being our guinea pig today.
You bet.
And for calling in. I do appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, have a good one.
Bye.
This is an example, and thanks so much to Glenn for this. I mean, that was so generous of Glenn to share his a moment out of his life with us and allow us to show how this works. And what it demonstrates is how incredibly powerful this whole storage system is that, you know, in our brain, that where we relate emotions to events, just the whole idea of relating emotions to events, and that the way that we connect those emotions has to do with these so-called submodalities. That is, whether it's black and white or whether it's color, whether there's sound associated with it, whether people have donkey ears on or not, all those sorts of things. And the power of doing this in politics is extraordinary. And you will start noticing now how when Bush wants to make a particular point, he will use a word over and over and over again with a particular tonality, and particularly in the advertising, over and over and over again, and boom, until pretty soon it's anchored. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century. But Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the old, stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya. He has no strength to lead. Yes, this you feared. Why, soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared. Gave them the old, never yet devil speak. Yes, with folks so windowed, no one could hear the truth above the roar.
Ah, yes.
And though your debating was a stinker, they bought it all, hook, line, and sinker. You razzle-dazzled them, and they gave you four more.
Now, if you saw the movie Chicago, that's an anchor. There's an auditory anchor for you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
On the internets.
Yes.
You cannot lead if you send mixed messages.
Yes. Welcome back. 52%, 52.1%. We now have the exit poll data. Some of it has been leaked. It's oddly enough showing up on a website in New Zealand, scoop.co.nz. Hey, look at the Ohio exit polls. Something to let your senator know about. 51% of the people coming out of the polling stations in Ohio on November 2nd said they had voted for John Kerry. And yet the computer tabulated vote was 48.7%. Now, that's a spread of about 3.5 points, which is about the same as they had in the Ukraine. That's an interesting one for you. Exit polls are used around the world as accurate indicators of whether elections have been burgled or not. There's no trick to exit polls. It's a pretty straightforward thing. Yeah, pretty straightforward process. On a national basis, Kerry is credited with 48.1% of the votes, although the exit polls showed that nationally, Kerry got 50.8%. This is extremely unlikely, shall we say, that this would ever happen. It, in fact, before the 2000 election, our exit polls in the United States, the first Bush election, and the first one where there was widespread use of electronic voting machines, before that election, our exit polls always pretty much corresponded with the vote. So, the Bush in the Supreme Court case, Moss versus Bush, this case before the Ohio Supreme Court, shows a 132,547 vote win for Kerry in Ohio. Very interesting. You can check that out. Cliff Arnebeck, the attorney on that, we had him on the show recently, showing that Bush actually won Ohio. Could it be? Could it be? I don't know, but I think we should look into it, and that's why I think that we should all be calling our senators and suggesting that they join with John Conyers in asking for an investigation of this. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As individuals, governments, and organizations around the globe unite to support workers and their families who were devastated during the December 26 tsunami, U.S. labor organizations have begun looking inward to see what they can offer for the relief effort. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees took the lead by donating $10,000 to the nonprofit organization Doctors Without Borders. Cheryl Kelly is a spokesperson for the Federation.
We're reaching out to our fellow workers across the globe who've had their livelihoods and entire way of life taken away from them by this devastating event.
Kelly says it's important for U.S. labor to remember their brothers and sisters overseas.
We feel like it's our obligation to help our brothers abroad. During 9/11, we had many countries to come to our aid, and we feel, you know, that it's necessary and it's important for us, especially as one of the leading labor unions here in the U.S., to do what we can to help those who are in need.
And on the West Coast, the California Nurses Association has begun working closely with the Sri Lanka Public Services Nurses Union to funnel contributions to areas with the most need. The association is also asking some members to volunteer to travel and assist in a country that even before the tsunami was facing a shortage of 7,000 nurses.
The United Mine Workers of America is waging a battle to protect workers from corporate abuses in bankruptcy courts. UMWA Communications Director Doug Gibson says bankruptcy laws need to be reformed so companies can't use them to wipe out health benefits, end union contracts, and take away pensions.
They were written basically by pro-business members of Congress and Bank. And in a bankruptcy court right now, the compensation to the workers that were injured by the bankruptcy falls far below compensation to vendors or corporate leaders. So the workers are really left out in the cold in bankruptcy court.
At the Cannleton coal mine in West Virginia, the UMWA is ready to use civil disobedience to protest use of the bankruptcy courts to throw miners out of work.
President Roberts has said he will engage in nonviolent disobedience down there, whether that means sitting in a road, blocking this mine entrance, whatever we have to do to let people know what's happening to American workers in federal bankruptcy court. It's a travesty. It really is.
The UMWA is in U.S. District Court in Ashland, Kentucky on behalf of miners in West Virginia, Kentucky, Illinois, and Indiana to defend health care benefits promised to miners by a 1992 federal law, benefits now threatened by corporate bankruptcy actions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to getting kids talking, the nation's need for speech therapists is losing its voice. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that the nation will need 120,000 speech pathologists by 2012, and recent estimates put the number of licensed therapists at 94,000. A large number of those therapists will be retiring over the next few years. Improvements in the ability to diagnose speech impairments and higher rates of autism have led to a greater demand across the country.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
When challenged directly by a crowd of America's troops about the Bushites' ongoing damnable failure to provide adequate armor for our soldiers, Pentagon Chief Donnie Rumsfeld was momentarily speechless. As the crowd murmured, Rummy said, "Now settle down, settle down. Hell, I'm an old man. It's early in the morning and I'm gathering my thoughts here." If any of the Bushites need clarity on the scandalous way they treat our soldiers, they need only visit Army Specialist Robert Loria of Middletown, New York. Last February, he was in one of Rumsfeld's unprotected Humvees when it was hit by a roadside bomb in Iraq. Loria's left hand and forearm were blasted off and shrapnel ripped through his body. He spent months in rehab trying to learn how to live without a hand. Finally, just before this Christmas, he was due to be released and return home when he was hit with another bomb. Rumsfeld's Pentagon presented Loria with a bill for $1,700, claiming he had erroneously received family separation pay while in rehab, plus travel expenses connected to his treatment. Also, they billed him for some of the Humvee parts damaged in the bombing that tore off his hand. Loria was devastated, but the Army brass didn't care, demanding payment before they would release him. Hello, the Halliburtons rip off billions from us taxpayers, but the Pentagon is hounding the grunts. "It's almost like I'm being abandoned," Loria said. "Like, you did your job for us and now you're no use. That's how it feels." Is that clear enough for you, Mr. Rumsfeld? Thanks to press coverage and intervention by some members of Congress, Loria's nightmarish treatment by the Pentagon has finally ended. The Army was forced to clear Loria's hokey debt and send him home. This is Jim Hightower saying, but why should a soldier who's made such an extreme sacrifice be treated so shabbily in the first place? And how many others are getting the same back of the hand?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
For a wrap. rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour. One of George W. Bush's another one has come forward. Former cabinet member. First we've had actually several of them. We had Paul O'Neill, Richard Clark, not quite a member of the cabinet, but should have been, writing his book about his years in the Bush administration and how the Bush administration completely blew it, left us undefended, and allowed 9/11 to happen. Yeah, strong language, you say. Prove it wrong, please. Bin Laden determined to attack in United States. August 6th, presidential daily briefing. What does George W. do? He goes on vacation, longest vacation in the history of the presidency. Refuses to go back to Washington, D.C. In fact, he ended up in Florida. A lot of people are still scratching their heads. Why is it that for over a month he refused to go back to Washington, D.C. after he got that daily briefing? Could it be that he knew that that plane that went down in Pennsylvania was headed for Washington, D.C., or the one that hit the Pentagon was, who knows? Who knows? Frankly, I don't think he knew that. I don't think he knew at that level of detail. But I think that he knew something big was going to happen. So we had Richard Clark saying, "I'm sorry, we let you down." Well, that's not something that you say in the Bush administration. He was dispatched. Then you had Paul O'Neill talking in his book with Ron Suskind saying that George W. Bush in a cabinet meeting was like, you know, a blind guy in a room full of deaf people, or was it the other way around? Well, now it's Christine Todd Whitman's turn. I mean, what's with this? I don't recall any Clinton administration cabinet officers or senior officials writing books after the Clinton administration. Maybe it's just selective memory on my part. If I'm wrong, call me and correct me. I'd love to hear it. But I don't. And our number 1-866-889-8894, by the way. And if you want to drop into the chat room, then TomHartman.com will get you there. I don't recall any Clinton administration officials after the fact telling. I mean, there were some folks writing about, yeah, we knew that Bill was a little frisky with regard to Monica. You know, there was the story of the attempt to cover that up. And I suppose for some people that is, you know, a high crime or misdemeanor. I'm frankly much more concerned with the failure to protect the United States of America. Or with a massive transfer of the wealth of this country from you and me to, in the case of Medicare, the pharmaceutical industry, or in the case of healthcare, to the health insurance industry, and on that goes. You know, I'm more concerned about the poisoning of our air and water, and that's apparently the thing that got Christine Todd Whitman. This from the Telegraph, newspaper in the UK. Interesting how this stuff gets rarely covered in the United States. I suspect, though, this will be getting some play because the book is going to be rolling out here shortly. This is sort of an advance. This guy has the first leak. Right? One of President George W. Bush's former cabinet officials has criticized his record and his electoral strategy, accusing him of running a short-term policy which will damage the Republicans in the future. See, this is what I was predicting before the election, that if George Bush ran and if George W. Bush won, that would begin the unraveling of the Republican Party. Because the policies that he is pursuing and that are being absolutely saluted in lockstep by all those who listen to the Department of Toady Affairs, the right-wing talk radio hosts who get their talking points every day, the folks at Faux News who get the, you know, Roger Ailes memo, the general herd in the administration who are terrified that if they speak out or say the wrong thing that they will get nailed, they'll lose their jobs, their wives will be harassed, whatever, as we saw with Joe Wilson. That there is this, that these do not represent, these behaviors of the Bush administration do not represent traditional Republican values. They certainly don't represent traditional Democratic values. They don't represent, in my opinion, traditional American values. American values include things like open and transparent government. The Bush administration has locked down more stuff. And we're not talking about things that terrorists could use. I mean, just absolute secrecy is the name of the game. The dissent, the right to dissent. In fact, not just the right to dissent, the celebration of dissent. When John Kerry was going around giving campaign speeches, you know, the Bushies would be there and they'd be yelling and chanting and holding their signs and whatnot. And Kerry welcomed them. He would sometimes talk with them. He would make jokes about them being there. They were there. They were always there. Not so in the Bush rallies or the Cheney rallies. No, you had to sign a loyalty oath. You had to be a party member. If you were wearing a business suit, you had to take it off if you were going to be in one of the photos with George W. So you'd look like the ordinary folk. I mean, it's just remarkable. So now Christy Whitman has written a book, apparently. It's called It's My Party Too, The Battle for the Heart of the GOP and the Future of America. And I'm telling you, the real Republicans, the folks who believed that Barry Goldwater and Everett Dirksen and Dwight Eisenhower being the liberal wing and Goldwater being the conservative wing, but nonetheless, within that spectrum, they all were advocates, by and large, for open government, for transparency in government, for honesty in government, for putting the interests of the people above the interests of corporations and private interests. I mean, there was a time, actually, when Republicans, many Republicans anyway, believed these things. There was a time when many Democrats believed these things. We have gone so far since Ronald Reagan began us down this road of government by corporate power. We have gone so far down the road of handing the reins of our government over to multinational corporations that have no allegiance to the United States. And the result of this has been the devastation of our economy and the suppression of dissent. How dare anybody speak out and point this out? So Christy Todd Whitman, she describes regular battles with, quote, extreme anti-government ideologues, end quote. This inside the Bush administration cabinet. Well, if they're anti-government, what are they pro? They're pro-corporate power. It's very simple. I mean, you can't just say, okay, let's do away with government regulations. We are no longer going to regulate how much mercury a power plant can spill out. Well, who gets to decide then? Do you and I get to decide? No, because the way that we decide is by electing officials to represent us in our government. Our government is us. So when you hear cons talking about unnecessary government regulation, what they're really saying is we, the multinational corporations, would rather not be bothered by the concerns of you, the people. That's what they're saying. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Scott in San Diego, California on the line. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, you know, I followed very closely when you were talking about what Bush had done by deliberately ignoring the attacks, and I think he had deliberately ignored everything coming into him because they needed a, quote, Pearl Harbor in order to invade Iraq.
Well, you're quoting now from the Center for America, or not for Center for America, Project for New American Century, document in which they laid out what it would take to topple,
and they were really hoping for a domino effect and that kind of nonsense from the Middle East. And I remember what you had said, you know, the PDB that Bush got was kind of like the culmination, the tip of the mountain that we eventually got attacked right after that. But, you know, Clinton got, and I was looking in the book, Richard Clark's book, for the quote. I may have heard him say this on Randy Rhoads' show, but he said that Clinton got a very similar memo 26 pages instead of two, and he immediately convened his Security Council, Sandy Berger, top administrators, got everybody together. They met every single day. After that, they stopped the Millennium Plot, the bomb plot in L.A., an alert FBI or a customs agent on the border caught that one. They stopped the Pachenko plot, several jets that were going to be destroyed over the Pacific, and they stopped the potential threat of Al-Qaeda hitching rides aboard Algerian gas tankers and perhaps blowing up one of them in the Boston Harbor, which would have flattened the city from the harbor and 7 miles inland. So they stopped those two attacks and one potential attack because they met every day.
And they tried to assassinate bin Laden twice unsuccessfully. They hit the factory in the Sudan, and they also threw missiles into Afghanistan and missed him by 30 minutes.
And they wanted to boost by $500 million the amount of money they were spending on translators in the FBI.
Right.
Bush.
Right. And all the time that he was doing this, the Republicans were screaming "Wag the dog" so loudly that they actually, you know, a Republican affiliated bunch came out with a novel about it. They came out with a movie about it. You know, the whole thing.
The whole thing.
That this president was so trying to get out from under his sex scandal that he would cook up this cockamamie idea that there was this terrorist bin Laden out there who was determined to get us, and that all of his efforts to try and stop him were actually a way of diverting us from Monica. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, what I think, Tom, and I think this is a deliberate plot. I think it goes back a lot further than just recently, but just the past couple of years. I think that the group of people were looking for some way to get into Iraq, to get into that oil, to get into that country, to destabilize the government, because, you know, that's what bin Laden does. He destabilizes Muslim governments or governments that are in Muslim-majority countries, and he states a caliphate. I think it's a 9th-century caliphate.
Yeah.
In these countries. Bush has done the same thing. He destabilized the government there in Iraq, and he wants to destabilize the Middle East. That's his plan, to destabilize the area and bring in democracy, or his version of it.
See, this is the point, Scott, and you're making it really well. Both George W. Bush and Osama bin Laden are idealists. They both believe that if only they're fundamentalists, yeah, fundamentalist idealists. If only everybody would do it their way, then the world would be perfect. And Bush says, you know, if only they would just let us come in with guns and force democracy on them. And bin Laden says, if only they would let us come in with guns and force 9th century Islam on them. And they're both wrong. I mean, it just fundamentalism doesn't work like that, and nationalism will always trump that. You have to democracy has to grow organically, otherwise it does. You know,
you have to want it. You have to bring it in.
This was the lesson of the French Revolution.
This in the prayer breakfast this morning, Tom?
No, I didn't.
Oh, this is scary what he said. Oh, they were just like bin Laden. He talks about the terrible destruction that would happen in Indonesia, not directly. He quotes from the Bible and how they built on moral sand. And
oh, my.
This
oh my.
Is terrible what DeLay said this morning.
Scary. Scott, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And I think. it's the Tom Hartman program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242-8272. Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Sometimes it's bad when the going gets tough. Yeah, we look in the mirror. Yeah, we wanna give up.
But you don't.
Sometimes you don't even want to try. Sometimes we cry.
And sometimes you get over it, and sometimes you push through, and sometimes you say, well, the election didn't turn out the way you want, but still we are here. Still we have an obligation to make this a good nation. And Christy Todd Whitman is apparently one of those folks. Here we have the former head of the Environmental Protection Agency writing a new book, It's My Party 2, The Battle for the Heart of the GOP and the Future of America. She says that Karl Rove, Mr. Bush's chief political advisor, may have helped him win the election, quote, but we must ask at what price to governing and at what risk to the future of the party. And the independent in the UK notes, she set the tone for the book by pointing out that Mr. Bush's 3 percentage point margin of victory is the lowest of any reelected incumbent in history. So much for a mandate. Bill Frist has been running around saying, actual quote. He says, it's radical. It's dangerous. Must be overcome. It's nothing less than a formula for tyranny by the minority. Tyranny by the minority. Well, Bill Frist should know. In 1996, there was a judge by the name of Richard Paez, P-A-E-Z. And Bill Clinton nominated him to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the California court. Well, it covers much of the West Coast all the way up to Alaska, but the Ninth Circuit. And conservatives in Congress held up this nomination for more than 4 years, culminating in an attempted filibuster on March 8th of 2000. Guess who voted for the filibuster? Bill Fritz. Fritz. Bill, good old Bill Fritz. He was directly confronted with this vote by Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation, notes the Center for American Progress. Schieffer said, Senator, a group called the American Progress Action Fund sent me a question to ask you, and here's what it says. Senator Fritz, if you oppose the use of the filibuster for judicial nominations, why did you vote to filibuster Judge Richard Paez when President Clinton nominated him on the Ninth Circuit? Frist's answer, filibuster, cloture, it gets confusing. As a scheduler, to get more information is legitimate, but not to kill nominees. In other words, he blithered incoherently. To be gentle. But American Progress, in fact, they say they have obtained a document that proves that Frist was not, as he suggested, voting to filibuster Paez for scheduling purposes or to get more information. Keep in mind, this was after the Republicans had blocked the nomination for 4 years. He voted to filibuster Paez for the very reason he said was illegitimate, block Paez's nomination indefinitely. On March 9th, 2000, former Senator Bob Smith, Republican of New Hampshire, issued a press release describing the intent of the Paez filibuster vote the day before. The release says Senator Smith, quote, built a coalition of several moderate and conservative senators in an effort to block Paez's nomination, end of quote. Frist was part of that coalition. Smith did not organize the filibuster to get more information on Paez. After all, his nomination had been pending for 4 years already. He organized the filibuster because he had already decided Paez was, quote, out of the mainstream of political thought and should not be on the court, end quote. So here we have our hypocrite of the week, Bill Frist, running around saying, we got to stop the Senate from being able to filibuster judicial nominations. By the way, because the Democrats are using it when he used it. And in fact, more judges. Congress approved 204 judicial nominees. More than the Republicans let through than during Clinton's time in office. This is incredible. 8 years of Clinton gets fewer than 4 years of Bush, and these guys are complaining about it? Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where despair is not an option. Get active!
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As individuals, governments, and organizations around the globe unite to support workers and their families who were devastated during the December 26 tsunami, U.S. labor organizations have begun looking inward to see what they can offer for the relief effort. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees took the lead by donating $10,000 to the nonprofit organization Doctors Without Borders. Cheryl Kelly is a spokesperson for the Federation.
We're reaching out to our fellow workers across the globe who've had their livelihoods and entire way of life taken away from them by this devastating event.
Kelly says it's important for U.S. labor to remember their brothers and sisters overseas.
We feel like it's our obligation to help our brothers abroad. During 9/11, we had many countries to come to our aid, and we feel, you know, that it's necessary and it's important for us, especially as one of the leading labor unions here in the U.S., to do what we can to help those who are in need.
And on the West Coast, the California Nurses Association has begun working closely with the Sri Lanka Public Services Nurses Union to funnel contributions to areas with the most need. The association is also asking some members to volunteer to travel and assist in a country that even before the tsunami was facing a shortage of 7,000 nurses.
The United Mine Workers of America is waging a battle to protect workers from corporate abuses and bankruptcy courts. UMWA Communications Director Doug Gibson says bankruptcy laws need to be reformed so companies can't use them to wipe out health benefits, end union contracts, and take away pensions.
They were written basically by pro-business members of Congress and banks. And in a bankruptcy court right now, the compensation to the workers that were injured by the bankruptcy falls far below compensation to vendors or corporate leaders. So the workers are really left out in the cold in bankruptcy court.
At the Cannleton coal mine in West Virginia, the UMWA is ready to use civil disobedience to protest use of the bankruptcy courts to throw miners out of work.
President Roberts has said he will engage in nonviolent disobedience down there, whether that means sitting in a road, blocking this mine entrance, whatever we have to do to let people know what's happening to American workers in federal bankruptcy court. It's a travesty. It really is.
The UMWA is in U.S. District Court in Ashland, Kentucky, on behalf of miners in West Virginia, Kentucky, Illinois, and Indiana to defend health care benefits promised to miners by a 1992 federal law, benefits now threatened by corporate bankruptcy actions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to getting kids talking, the nation's need for speech therapists is losing its voice. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that the nation will need 120,000 speech pathologists by 2012. And recent estimates put the number of licensed therapists at 94,000. A large number of those therapists will be retiring over the next few years. Improvements in the ability to diagnose speech impairments and higher rates of autism have led to a greater demand across the country.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Is you glad you got nothing to feel? Is you glad that it's all so real? Hey, babe, somebody shine on me. Lay down.
And welcome back. One of the folks in our chat room, go over to Barbara Boxer's site and thank her. There are these rumors flying around the internet that Barbara Boxer is going to tomorrow challenge the legitimacy of the Ohio vote. I've also seen articles and stories suggesting that the reality is that somebody wrote a piece a week or so ago on a blog saying, this is what Barbara Boxer should say. You know, I, Barbara Boxer, blah-de-blah, you know, Ohio, blah-de-blah. And that little piece that person wrote has gotten clipped and repasted all over the internet. It was on the Daily Kos yesterday, for example. And as far as I know, to the folks in our chat room, please give me a link if I'm wrong on this. But as far as I know, she has not come out and said anything about this. And we'll see. We'll see. Tomorrow is the day, and we will find out. A little bit of news here. This, again, what was it, 2 weeks ago, I believe, that a group in South Korea had used stem cells to help a woman who'd had a spinal cord injury walk. And now, and you still have the folks on the Reich saying, oh, there's a stem cell, don't give people false hope, right? That was Laura Bush's thing. Oh, you're giving people false hope. How dare you do research? Right. Keep in mind, this is pandering to the most paranoid extreme end of the Right to Life movement. In fact, it goes beyond the Right to Life movement. This is the most conservative. This is Opus Dei. This is the group, the Catholic group that Scalia is a member of. The hardcore fundamentalist Catholics and beyond, you know, and the Baptists and whatnot who have joined them. It's interesting, by the way, the Catholic Church did not have a doctrine with regard to abortion until just a couple hundred years ago, until just, I think it was in the 1800s. I don't have the exact year here. At one point I knew, but anyway, until relatively recently. It was never a problem for them before. But anyhow, the point is that to get embryonic stem cells, you don't have to have an abortion. In fact, abortions are never involved in embryonic stem cells. It would be too much hassle First of all, if the fetus was more than a couple of days old, it wouldn't be embryonic stem cells anymore. It would be a fetus. And secondly, if you were to do that abortion within the first 24 hours, it would be, you know, so after fertilization, it would be so messy. I mean, to get one fertilized ovum, it would be ridiculous. Nobody would ever consider using abortion to get get embryonic stem cells. So where do they come from? Well, it's a very simple process. Hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions. It's a lot. Hundreds, certainly worldwide, millions every year of people, of couples, want to have a baby and they can't because the woman's fallopian tubes have been scarred. This is the most common cause, and it's usually caused by infection. Chlamydia is probably the most common. There's a bunch of different pathogens that will cause infections. And the infection creeps up into the fallopian tubes and causes scarring, and the scar tissue it makes it so that the eggs don't roll down the tubes from the ovaries, or they don't hang out in the fallopian tubes, which is actually where they get fertilized, those of you who didn't take sex ed. And so, anyhow, these women are incapable of conceiving, but their ovaries are still full of eggs, and their uteruses function. They could grow a baby, as it were. And so what they do is they anesthetize them, and they stick a needle through their abdomen into one of their ovaries, and they draw out a few thousand or a few hundred thousand individual eggs. Keep in mind, these are cells that are so small they're microscopic. It's like, you know, you ever pick up the acidophilus pills at the, you know, for your stomach at the, you know, I take these things when you travel in the third world, and it's like one pill, 6 billion live bacteria, right? And in one little capsule, 6 billion? Well, yeah, they're that small. So anyhow, they draw out, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of eggs, and they put them in a petri dish, and then they get some sperm from the husband, and we won't go into that, and they put that in the petri dish, and stir them up, you know, and let them hang out together for a few hours, and thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of eggs get fertilized by sperm, and then they look through them and they sort around and they look for ones that look like they're, you know, viable and strong and healthy, and they pick one out, or maybe two, and they implant them in the woman's womb, and it grows and becomes a baby. This is called in vitro fertilization, and it's done every day in America. Now, it is a violation of Catholic doctrine to do this. And the reason why is because of what happens next. Now you have taken a woman who can't have a child, and you have given her the opportunity to have a baby. That seems like a good thing. But you now have a petri dish that's filled with fertilized eggs. Now, there's still just, you know, two cells, four cells, eight cells, or one cell that, you know, where the DNA from the sperm has mingled with the DNA from the ovum. But it's still just a couple of cells. I mean, these are still so small you can't see them without a microscope. What they call undifferentiated blast cells or undifferentiated stem cells. Undifferentiated cells. And what are you going to do with them? Well, occasionally people will, after they've had this procedure done, they'll have that petri dish full of cells frozen in liquid nitrogen so that if the pregnancy is not successful, they can take another one of those stem cells, another one of those fertilized eggs out and implant it. Or that if the husband dies, God forbid, or, you know, if he goes off to Iraq or something, people will have this done so that the woman can still become pregnant with this guy's child in the future if they want. But that's the minority of cases where they save them. In the majority of cases, what they do is they flush them down the sink. They wash out the petri dish. And you know, hundreds of thousands of fertilized eggs go, and that's it. They're no longer viable. Once they're no longer at body temperature, I mean, you drop them down to room temperature or whatever, and you know, they're gone. Mix them up with a little chlorinated water, they're dead. And this is considered by the Right to Life movement and by the extremists among the Catholics and the Baptists and whatnot, this is considered murder. And that's why they're opposed to in vitro fertilization. And that's why they're opposed to embryonic stem cell research, because the embryonic stem cells that are used for this research into things like spinal cord injuries and Parkinson's disease and whatnot are taken from those cells that are left over in that Petri dish. What you do is you've got the cells in the Petri dish, you let them divide a couple of times until you've got 8 cells, 12 cells, 8, 16, 32 cells, and then you stop it right there, and you just pull out those cells one at a time, and those become those are your stem cells. And the neat thing about them is they can become any cell in the body because they have not yet begun to differentiate. That is, they have not yet begun to be any cell. In other words, a particular cell has not said, okay, I'm going to be part of the head. I'm going to be part of the foot. I'm going to be a toenail. It hasn't happened yet. It's just a little blob of growing cells. So every one of those cells has the potential to become anything in the body. And so if you pull those cells out and inject them into a person who has a part of their body injured, you know, they've had liver disease, they have pancreatitis, they're not producing insulin, they have diabetes, they've lost dopamine producing cells in their brain, they have Parkinson's disease, they've had a spinal cord injury. You inject these cells in there and they migrate to the site. The body knows where it needs repair work done. They migrate to the site where the repair work needs to be done and they become those cells. And Bush has said no to this. Well, he said sort of yes, sort of no, right? The Solomonic answer. So anyhow, here now today, having said all that, Japanese researchers today, from AFP News, Japanese researchers today said they had successfully treated monkeys with Parkinson's disease through a stem cell transplant plant, potentially paving the way for an ideal remedy to the intractable disease. It was the first time such transplants have worked on primates suffering from the degenerative nerve disorder, said Nobuo Hashimoto, a medical doctor at the Department of Neurosurgery at Kyoto University Graduate School of Medicine. The researchers extracted embryonic stem cells capable of releasing dopamine and neurotransmitter from fertilized eggs of Cynomolgus monkeys. The embryonic stem cells were then transplanted into 6 Cynomolgus, I'm sure I mispronounced that, monkeys, which had drug-induced symptoms similar to Parkinson's disease in humans. 3 months later, the monkeys' symptoms, such as trembling hands, had lessened, Hashimoto said. This is published in the website of the Journal of Clinical Investigation. But we can't allow that. We can't allow research into that because it's working with those fertilized eggs. Do you get this? I mean, how wacky this is? I respect people's religious beliefs. I have my own. And if somebody did not want to have in vitro fertilization because they were horrified by the idea that the leftover eggs would be flushed down the sink, then they shouldn't have it done. But to say that those couples who have had in vitro fertilization who then want to say, okay, those leftover fertilized eggs, you can use those to extract stem cells from them, they are not people. They are not even fetuses. It's a little dot that's smaller than the pin of a head, the head of a pin, that is nothing. Well, it's alive. Okay. It's growing. It has the potential to become a human. Here we get to the argument. Where does human life begin? And, of course, this is the argument that the Supreme Court took up in Roe v. Wade. And we're not going to revisit that either, because, as I said, this has nothing to do with abortion. It has everything to do with plain the politics of religion. Let's move along from that. A state program, this here in Vermont, people are starting to wake up to this. This is fascinating. Here in the People's Republic of Vermont, this article was in the Burlington Free Press. The state program set up to give tax credits to businesses that create jobs has given out more than $4 million to firms that cut their payrolls and has cost taxpayers more than $92,000 per job created, the state auditor reported this week. We are giving corporations $92,000 to create a job, and many of them then take the money and run. The auditor reviewed rewards to the 21 companies that received credits of more than $31,000 each in the 2002 and 2003 tax years. The 21 companies reviewed were awarded a total of $20.9 million in tax credits after projecting that they would create a total of 3,478 new jobs. You get this now? These companies come in and they say, give us $21 million and we'll create 3,400 jobs. Now, the math on that is a little, you know, flaky to begin with. But in any case, instead, those companies created a net of 226 new jobs. 226 jobs. We paid $20.9 million here in the state of Vermont, and these companies created 226 jobs. They said they would create 3,478. Eight of the 21 companies, that's roughly a third. Isn't what, three times eight? Eight of the 21 companies, it's more than a third, reduced jobs during the review period, but were allowed $8.1 million in tax credits anyway. Anyway, this is pretty incredible. And this is this, you know, we're just this little tiny town, state of Vermont, and they've just noticed this. This has been, I'm telling you, this has been going on all across the United States for years. More than $150 billion a year in corporate welfare, and much of it takes this form, the form of tax credits, of local communities saying, oh, yes, please come into our community and create some jobs. Walmart, for example. Not acknowledging that for every job that Walmart creates, there's going to be one or two jobs that used to be in locally owned businesses that are going to vanish. In fact, as the Detroit News business pages point out, it was a great article. Actually, this came out of the Washington Post originally. The one I have was clipped out of Detroit News. The headline, in the new job market, middle class earners fall behind. And it starts out, and this is just classic. Teresa Geerling is living the life, the future of life in the middle of the American workforce. After years cleaning the insides of airplanes and polishing their outsides, Geerling was laid off from American Airlines last year. The job was physically taxing for Geerling, age 50, but the nearly $32,000 annual pay and health care coverage helped provide a typical middle-class life in the small Midwestern community of St. Charles, Missouri. Now, she works the overnight shift at a local hospital as a nurse's aide while completing coursework to be certified as a medical assistant. That would be seen to be a smart move because, unlike airlines, which are contracting, healthcare is one of the industries that many economists will need more workers, right, in the future. Yet, rarely has Geerling's work life been so precarious. If she can't stay on her husband's health plan, her cost for health insurance offered by the hospital will be $200 a month, more than five times as much as at the airline. There are few job protections, no pension benefits beyond the option for a 401k savings plan, and she makes $2 an hour less than before. To have a chance at higher pay, she must continually train herself in new areas. Geerling, the authors Jonathan Krim and Griff Wright, Geerling is the leading edge of changes that herald a new era for millions of Americans earning around the national average of $17 an hour. Get ready. Well, people say it's coming. I'm saying it's been here. It's been here. Ever since Reagan became president, we have seen this steady decline in the average wage of the middle class, and it has fallen off the edge of the earth since George W. came into office, 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers.
Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century, but Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We were born before the wind, also younger than the sun. Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sail into the mystic.
And welcome back. See, now, this is where it all comes together, see? The middle class steadily declining, wiping out decent jobs in the United States, jobs being shipped overseas so that multinational corporations who are huge donors to the Republican Party and to the Democratic Party to a large extent can make more money. And what does the corporate media want us to discuss? What do the Republicans want us to discuss? Stem cells, abortion, gay parades. That's what they want us to decide. Please don't discuss economics. 1-866-889-8894. Martha in Massachusetts on the line. Hey, Martha, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I wanted to tell you, I was listening to the Al Franken show a while ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, he's on opposite you, but I can get. I was out, and I can get him on my car radio, but I can't get you on the car radio.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, he had a journalist on who was in Iraq, and he returned from there, and he wrote a book about how utterly deplorable the conditions are there, and that Halliburton, that got that huge contract, is has done nothing over there.
Yeah, no, we've reported that. There's very, very little of the redevelopment money, the rebuilding money, has been spent. In fact, it's virtually ground to a halt now because they can't guarantee the security of the contractors any longer.
He's talking about before that, that he basically they subcontracted out to Iraqi natives, and what little building did get done there got done by them. Yeah. But they basically got a blank check from the government. And they've been padding expenses, and they've done very little. And that's before the security got so bad there.
Yeah, this is Martha, this is nothing new. It's not a surprise. Thank you for the call, but this is, you know, welcome to the Halliburton world. I mean, but it's not news. I mean, this has been going on ever since the beginning of the war. This is, the war profiteers came out of the woodwork for this thing. And we are seeing war profiteering on a scale that would have... Abe Lincoln was in agony over the war profiteering during the Civil War. He was absolutely in agony about it. You go back and read Carl Sandburg's biography of Lincoln, and he was just totally flipped out about it. And it declared that he was going to do something. In fact, there was a lot of conspiracy theories about it. He was shot after the war because he was going to go after these big corporations, what had become big corporations as a consequence of the war. It's not the generally accepted conspiracy theory now, but there were folks at the time who thought that. But under the Bush administration, it's don't worry, be happy, take the money. Remarkable. It's remarkable. It's Tom Hartman with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.